Welcome to the Buyer's Desk, your weekly resource for all things natural food retail.
This season, we're shaking things up with shorter weekly episodes to fit your busy schedule.
Each month, we dive into SPINS data, explore trends with industry leaders, spotlight emerging brands, and share actionable strategies to help you thrive.
Get ready to explore the world of natural food retail.
Hey, folks, and welcome to the Buyer's Desk, an Infra podcast. I am Chris Sorensen, your host for today's episode. And we are diving into leadership, the real, human, messy, transformative leadership with someone who's reshaping what it looks like across industries. I recently had the opportunity to go through Plucky's So Now You're a Manager program, and it was honestly one of the most refreshing leadership development experiences I've had. I've been through a few. It was equal parts practical and personal, and it really challenged me to think differently about how I show up for my team and how I do it in a way that's sustainable and rooted in trust. So our guest today is Jen Dari, founder of Plucky, a leadership coaching company that is helping folks become the kind of leaders we all want to work with. So whether you're running a department, a store, or an entire business, this conversation will offer tools and inspiration for leading with intention, clarity, and heart. Well, hey, Jen, welcome to the Buyer's Desk. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Chris. It is so nice to see you again. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, when we figured we were going to talk about leadership, I was going through this at that time. And, you know, I think in our initial conversation, I was like, if this is everything I think it's going to be, like, will you be on the podcast? So I really appreciate you being here to talk through this.
Glad it was everything and more.
Yeah, no, it was interesting. And we'll dive into some of that. But first, I want to start off with just Plucky itself. Like, what inspired you to start that? And why did you land on leadership coaching being this vehicle for change?
Yeah, so Plucky is mostly a leadership coaching firm, meaning that most of my time is spent one-on-one with folks who are leaders or moving into that realm. And the other chunk of my time I spend teaching, like this manager training you're talking about. And both of those, I guess I'll say skill sets or interests of mine came from my experiences before Plucky, where I was in charge of employee development at an agency and on the leadership team. And I noticed a couple of things. First is, that leadership team can be lonely. It can be very lonely to be a leader. You may have peers, but not everybody is always in the same rooms with you, and you have to make some hard decisions. And what I noticed was that it was really just so edifying, I think, for the other folks on the team to have a neutral listener. Now, of course, back then I wasn't particularly neutral, meaning that I was also in their company and, you know, we were coworkers. But I saw the value of having someone, even internally as an employee development person, I saw the value for those folks who do have to make hard decisions to have someone to talk it out with. So that for sure lights up for me when I'm coaching, as I was this morning and I will be later this afternoon, folks who are in those positions. But also I was noticing that we were taking folks who were good at the content of their areas. So for example, engineering or designing, and we were like, you're so good at that. Now you should be in charge of the people that do that. And that is a very different skill set, Chris, as you well know. And I thought, I feel like there's space out there to provide training for people to start to see themselves not as an individual contributor towards projects, but rather someone who's leading those projects, or in this case, managing people. And so, yeah, both of them came out of a need that I was observing around me where, like, everybody's trying their best, but they needed some support systems that weren't necessarily available.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've been in that place many of times. And yeah, like you said, when you confide in folks within the organization, you know, you can cross the line, you know, sometimes in that of, you know, you need to have some privacy in, you know, situations that are going on within an organization. So having that external company or person to connect with and provide that level of guidance, I think is huge. So I love that you're doing
particularly
that.
At the very, very top, where it would be kind of problematic if you show up to a meeting and you say, I'm the CEO and I'm not sure I made the right call. Like, don't do that. You know, so to have someone private to voice those concerns with is really helpful.
Yeah, no, I agree. So with Plucky itself, I kind of get what inspired you to do that. But where do you find that as like really being the vehicle for change? Because what I hear from you too is that people needed this. How do you view the work that you're doing as actually making that intended, you know, change that you're hoping to have?
Yeah. Well, I don't know what world you feel you live in, Chris, but the one I'm in feels pretty dysregulated. You leave your home, maybe even in your home, things are changing a lot. It's a lot of stress. And I like to think about the systems that we're in terms of who can provide some regulation to the communities we're in, the workplaces we're in. And managers are really well poised to either, inflame our anxiety or lead with a bit of calm and direction and assuredness. And so I think the change that I'm hoping in the world is that by having productive moments with individuals who are self-aware, wanting to do better, to send them out after coaching session, after training, with a bit more levity and thoughtfulness about their own identities as someone with power, that they can bring some much needed stability to the big projects that we're all working on in 2025 on the planet.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I kind of want to go into some of the things that we talked about in the class. So I think this is a good place to go. So it's the course is So Now You're a Manager. I felt like it had a great mix of structure but also reflection. And I loved how you had us try to think of things not in the framework of how we normally think of things, to be able to have these analogies to actually really identify how we view leadership and certain things. So why do you see it as so important for these new and seasoned managers to invest in this kind of intentional leadership work and kind of see outside of what they normally see to get to that new maybe level of realization or self-reflection?
Well, I kind of referred to this a second ago, but I do think that moving into a manager role is an identity moment. You possibly have never had a responsibility that great before, or maybe you have, but in a different context. And so there's an opportunity to re-examine, hang on, I know who I was before, and now with this new power, responsibility, who am I now? Who do I want to be like? And there's a lot of life experiences that let us sort of slow boil that sort of transition, becoming a parent, maybe you have 9 months to prepare for that, you become a sibling, maybe your parents have another kid, all kinds of things like that. But often, a management moment happens when somebody quits or the team escalates too big or there's something dramatic where it's like, oh my God, okay, you're now in charge of them. And even if it is a promotion process, nobody's emotionally supporting you through the possibility that you might get promoted, right? So my point is that transition is pretty hard stop, pretty all of a sudden you've got that title. And so I don't think we make time to do that work. That evolution. And so that identity work ends up being earned on the job, which is totally fine. Who am I as a leader? I don't know. I don't have time for that question today because I have to go out and people are needing me, at 9 a.m. And that's entirely fine, except that if you don't ever make a little bit of a shoulder in the road to sort of step off and say, is this who I wanted to be? Is this aligned with my values? I know you have strong values. So that shows up in your leadership. If you don't ever make time for that, you're just sort of showing up as a ghost of yourself. You're just attending meetings versus leading meetings, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I like what you said there too, even at the beginning of who are you as a manager? Because not only do you need to view yourself differently, but people now view you differently. The relationships that you've had with your peers that are now maybe not your peers and you have new peers, I think one thing you mentioned is the amount of responsibility or even sensed power that people have of you now changes. So the power in the room changes when you're there, or the dynamics, the power dynamics, right? So
yeah,
I thought that was an interesting thing that you talked about with us as well.
I was going to say in the class, we also definitely touch on the fact that, if you come into a meeting and you complain about your boss, it's one thing if you're with peers and you're all sort of part of the gang. And it's another thing now if you're a boss yourself. And that's totally inappropriate, right? If you're a manager and you come in and you're crap talking the people above you, it's unprofessional. And the same words that you could say maybe the same exact sentences, but they have different weight now. And you have to be aware of that. And the best leaders in my eyes are people who are mindful about how to wield the energy in the room and in those moments, and certainly the power that they have on their plate.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, it's this, I think, comes back to also the self-awareness that you talked about of being a manager. One thing I want to kind of switch over to is one of the concepts that you brought up early on in the class that really stuck with me. That was like, duh, it was so easy. It was a clarifying moment for me that just really helped me in my approach. And that is the coaching versus consulting. Like, I think to what you talked about is people often get in a role because they're good at the thing. And so we get into this leadership role and we're just consultants, right? And we're consulting on how to do it and telling people what to do, how to do. But this thing of like being a consultant of like helping people get to the answers. Can you like dive into this a little bit more? Like, how did you come to this as being like an effective framework? Yeah, mm-hmm. Paradigm, yeah.
Yeah, well, it shows up a lot, like if someone's interested in coaching and we'll have an introductory call and I will say, here's what I think a coach is, because that's relevant, right? And I would say that if you have a continuum and you have a consultant on one side and coach on one side, and again, by the way, for those listening who are not coaches, but managers, the same thing applies to y'all. So a consultant would be, you have a problem and I'm an expert and I give you the answer. You pay me to give you the answer. Great. Coach is so far on the other side of it, things where it's you have a problem. And as a coach, I kind of think you know your own answer. So you're going to leverage me and I'm going to be a good listener. And I have skills, obviously, on my side that I'm going to help you realize your own answer internally. And I would say that generally I am a consultant. So I find myself somewhere in the middle, meaning that I do think you know a lot about yourself and I'm not going to impose myself on that. But sometimes you just don't know how to fire someone, or sometimes you just literally have never been through a poor performance conversation or positive things too, right? Like giving someone a promotion. And so I personally, as a coach, I find myself weighing in a little bit more towards consultant than a pure coach from time to time, just because I'm handling a population that hasn't done these things before. The way that translates for a manager like yourself is that, of course, you've probably been rewarded in that promotion by being very good at the day-to-day execution of a job. And therefore, a consultant, you know the answer, you're the expert. But the job of management is not to be right all the time and to get all like the most points and all the stuff done. It's to make sure that the team is operating well and that those individuals cumulatively are making good things happen. So your job now is not to push things over the finish line, but rather to empower people to find it in themselves to push things over the finish line. And that's why I do think having a manager who has a bend towards coaching in that way is not only helpful for the teammates, but also the manager themselves, because it's just too dang much to do in one job to assume I'm going to do all the work and then somehow tell the other people to do work, but I'm not really going to trust them. I'm not totally going to delegate. I'm just going to do it anyway, you know, and that's a slippery slope.
Yeah. And I think, you know, people that are good at their job that get promoted, and maybe this is an overgeneralization, tend to have at least some sort of perfectionist tendency. So that consulting like piece comes out as I need to consult because it's not perfect. It's not the way I would do it. It's not the way we should be doing it. But how do people actually learn is through coaching, right? So it's like, if you want to, as a manager, be able to back away from doing everything and overseeing everything, you have to coach for people to learn themselves. You're teaching them to fish. And once they get really good at fishing, you no longer have to be the consultant. And sometimes you still have to step in for new things, right? When you need to teach or train people. But the coaching method actually makes managing easier over time. Where consulting, you're just fishing for people forever. Right?
It's very short-sighted. Yeah. And actually, I mean, what you were just saying makes me think about part of the trouble is that you just got rewarded for having experience and knowledge and doing a lot of things. So that success metric needs to evolve too. As a manager, you need to now understand what got me here is not what's going to get me further ahead next time. That's a different success metric. And it is that's really hard to track. Like how are you doing as a manager? Is it that nobody quit? Like that's a weird metric, you know? So the ability to scale yourself is really what we're talking about. And sometimes there's some grief with that because people probably did really well because they found something that worked for them and they liked the work. So there's also this sort of, I don't know, catch 22 moment when you get that promotion finally, where it's like, I'm so glad I'm a manager, but also I really liked that stuff I was doing. And now I'm not so good at this. And, you know, I mean, the older we get, the crappier we are at being bad at things. So I think your perfectionism point is spot on. And again, it's all identity. How do I feel successful? And in this new realm, that requires a little bit of thought.
So just thinking about the, you know, this coaching and consulting and how we approach this, it's the avenue or the spaces that we approach this in. One thing you brought up is the one-on-one, which is the leader's most powerful tool, I think is how you framed it. What do you see as making this so important, and how can, you know, leaders thinking about the independent retailer? So we're in a retail store. How do store leaders rethink those conversations, or even rethink having them versus not, and to be meaningful for both them and their direct reports?
Yeah, so I'll take a minute to just define one-on-one. So for me, a one-on-one is a regular meeting between a manager and their report. And it can happen weekly or biweekly or even monthly, but it's a regular meeting and it's usually for a specific allotment of time. So for the folks you're talking about, this probably isn't, I meet with my manager every week for 30 minutes in their office. Like, I mean, the folks you're talking about are out on the floor, I assume, and, you know, doing a bunch of other stuff. But the structure still holds true, which is that I have a reliable time when I am with my manager where I can ask questions, get feedback. They are there to listen to me, and we are there to, you know, meeting of the minds of a sort. One-on-ones often get sort of capsized by becoming like project updates, like, hey, I'm reporting in, this is what I did last week, this is what I'm doing this week, which doesn't have zero value, but at the same time, that could probably have been an email or a Slack message or something. So the reason that I think they're very powerful for leaders is not for that kind of update, but because literally you're getting the information. Like, you're, how is the person? How is the team? What are they noticing? An opportunity for you to then weigh in on things. I've noticed that, you know, you haven't been as attentive lately. What is everything okay? What's going on? You're just flying blind if you do not have moments of connection with the people on your staff. And so what I think is really sort of the whole ball game is take the win, take the information, spend a few minutes with those folks on a regular basis, individually again, because that's where all of your data for management is going to come from. If not, you can pretend you know what's going on with people, or you can even pretend it's irrelevant. But at the end of the day, retention issues, toxicity, the team's happiness, all really depends on you taking some time with each of those people on staff and finding out really what the heck is going on. I know it seems like it can be an inconvenience for a lot of leaders. Like, I don't have time for this kind of thing. And I would say that's probably true. You don't have time until you really are screwed. And then you're going to be like, oh no, I'm in an HR problem for the next 6 weeks of my life. Whereas if I had just had those touch points regularly, you know, again, the fallout is not nearly as dramatic.
Yeah, I actually, the one thing you said, it was actually the pivotal point where I realized I needed to have one-on-ones with my staff when I was in retail. I was like a very early manager. You know, I left the industry that I had went to school for and came to the co-op world, working in retail. And I started as like just a lead, became a supervisor, and all of a sudden now I'm manager. And so as a manager, I am addressing the red flashing lights everywhere. And I had my best employee put in their notice that they were going to another place. And I still, as like a very inexperienced manager, had the wherewithal to ask why. And he told me that. He said, you're focused on all the big problems and I am doing my job every day really well, super hard, killing it. And you don't notice, you don't say anything, you don't spend any attention or time with me. You're always addressing the problems. And why would I want to be with a manager that's spending all their time on the people that don't deserve it? And I was just like, oh, dang, like, whew, thank you. That was like such a gift. So I mean, in that scenario, I like found a way to be like, well, how can I keep you? If I do these things, will you stay? And it wasn't even the money that he was going for, that he negotiated. It was the, yes, if you will give me attention, I will stay. And from that day on, I was like, one-on-ones are the most important thing, and have done them throughout in any time I've been a manager. So I agree with you. You don't have time to do them until you realize you know.
Exactly.
Yeah,
your best person leaves. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would float a question out for the folks listening too, to use with their team. A really, I don't know, fun in my eyes question to ask that each individual team member is, who's the most stressed person on our team? And if you ask that to each person, so let's say you have five people reporting into you, imagine that they all say the same name. let's say they all say, oh, Ben is the most stressed person. This is a huge data point for you. You now are like, okay, what the hell's going on with Ben? Also, what is going on with Ben that is now leaking onto the team? Where are they noticing at? What is the impact? How can I support Ben by which the trickle down of that affects the team? Another scenario would be they all say different names. Different problem. If everybody is naming a different stressed person, you now have a very, like, much more strange chronic stress going on. So now the way you respond to that as a manager is slightly different. But this is like a throwaway question, like, who's the most stressed person on the team? It seems so neutral and benign. But in reality, the information you get back from that kind of question is huge. Another one is, what is something we should be talking about on our team, but we're not? Now that is spicy AF. And some people are going to feel really scared by what's going to come back at them. But I swear, you know, you ask that question and even if people aren't giving you 100% the right answer, because you are the person that at the end of the day can fire them, you're going to get something. And that is going to give you a hint of, oh man, this is going on under the hood on this team and I should pay attention to it. Again, you could pretend those half hours are really drag on your system and go do the shiny flashing lights, like you said. But there's all this wisdom if you just spend a little time and ask the right questions with people. And man, you could run a really tight ship if you had access to that.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, and some of the things that come up like in those is spicy, or you learn things and then it's like, oh, now that I know this, I have to do something about it. And so the connection I have to that is you talk a lot about the humanity of leadership, like holding boundaries, being present, showing up with empathy, but also needing to make the hard calls. So whether it's in a one-on-one or, you know, any other scenario that comes along with managing people, how do you coach people or consult to balance all of that with, like, thinking about the independent retailer, that fast pace, high expectations of like running a business and a retail business like that?
I don't know if you would know this book, but there's a great book about writing called Bird by Bird by Anne Lamott. And she tells the story of, I think it's her brother, when they were kids, he all of a sudden realized that he had this huge research project due the next day. It had to be about like 50 different birds or something insane. And the kid was like freaking out. And the dad said, well, what we're going to do is we're going to sit down and we're going to go bird by bird. And I think they stayed up all night and they finished the project, right? But that's where the title comes from in this book. And when you ask that question, it makes me think of that, which is, you don't have to do everything all at once. You just have to go bird by bird. You just, you know, like, you don't have to do everything every week, but you should probably do everything every month, you know? So if you decide that for your team and the frenetic pace that's going on, you actually can only meet up with people for 20 minutes every 2 weeks, Godspeed. That's fine. That's way better than none, right? And so of all the different stuff you're doing, I know it can be such ease to imagine that I'm going to have the same schedule every day. I don't have any decision fatigue. You know, I'm just going to run that back. It's probably not what the landscape looks like of a day of the job of a manager. So just make sure you're touching all these points, checking in with people, giving feedback, creating some team morale moments, culture of recognition, appreciating people. Just make sure you're doing it, again, I'm loosely saying every month versus every day. Don't put that pressure on you because it is a lot to balance. But so long as you're, you know, touching all the buttons on a regular basis, I think you're in good shape.
Yeah, no, I think having realistic expectations, is also a good thing to have. So thinking back to even just like, you know, boundaries, thinking of like empathy and hard calls, like, you know, They exist together, but sometimes they feel like they're polar opposites. And when you are an empathetic or a sensitive person and you really, really care about your people and your team, and you have to also make hard calls and hold people accountable, what are some of the pieces there? Because I know sometimes it's very easy to be like, well, let's just not talk about it and see if it works itself out. It never works itself out. So it's like where I come into it is like, we always need to talk about it right away, right now. But like, how do you, and that's where I kind of want to know, like, how do you balance some of that, like the bad piece of it?
Well, I mean, you're always being kind to someone and unkind to someone, right? So like, if in your mind I'm giving critical feedback, you're like, oh, that would be unkind to that person. So you say, I'm not going to say it right now, you know, I'll be kind there. somebody on the team is affected by that poor performance, and you're being unkind to those people. So we'll just take an example, right? Somebody who comes in late every day to work, like, oh, it might be sort of a hard conversation for you to imagine approaching them about that and confronting them. So you don't. But in that moment, you're being very unkind to the people that have to cover that person's butt because they're not in on time. And so that notion of like being nice or not nice enough, like it's always greater than just one person, right? And so if in this case, critical feedback to one person, no doubt their poor performance or their challenges are being covered by a bunch of other people on the team who are, you know, the quiet problem to, you know, go back to your person that quit. Like they're the person, they may not elevate this to you like, hey, what the hell? I'm, you know, covering for them all the time until they just quit. And then you're in a bad place. So just remember that whatever conversation you're avoiding, somebody else is also going to be damaged by the avoidance.
I think that's a great call out because that's, you know, often, you know, not seen. And even when it's brought up, it's like, oh, well, it's not that bad, you know, because if this person's covering for another person, sometimes you don't see how bad things could really be if they weren't doing the covering. One thing you said, though, that just brought me back to Brené Brown's work is she says clear, you know, clear is kind, right? But then she also has like articulated the difference between nice and kind, like being nice to someone, telling them what you think they want to hear, but being kind is telling them what they need to hear. So not only, I think, are you being unkind to those other people, but you're actually being unkind to that person that deserves that feedback because you're not being clear with them. You're being nice. You're saying things that you think they want to hear, not that they need to hear. And I think of that to the simple fact of when someone has something in their teeth, you know, are you being nice or kind? Are you being nice by just being, oh, I don't want to make them feel bad? Or are you being kind by saying you got something in your tooth because you don't want them to show up to other people with something in their tooth, right? It's as simple as that. And that can go, I think, deeper to other issues.
It's such a great perspective. And, you know, what a gift you would be if you're the kind of person that people know, if there's a problem, he will talk to me about it. Because that means that if you don't talk about it, there's safety in that. Okay, I know Chris would tell me if there's a problem. And to set yourself up as a manager who, you know, when I tell you you have something in your teeth, now my report is so afraid that they're going to get fired for that, right? Because it's the first time I've ever said anything to them. Like, create a safe space, be the type of manager, have the identity and style that you are a person that is going to bring things up when they're hard, acknowledge that it's hard, but that you will always do that. And you now set the expectation that people know, okay, great, he's not faking it all the time because nobody's perfect, right?
Yeah, no, it's, and if you think you're perfect or if you're expecting perfection, that's not reality, right? There, you can strive for perfection, but we will never attain that. It's
exactly
falsity.
Refreshingly, yeah.
Yeah. So one thing I wanted to ask you before we wrap up, if someone out there listening, an infrastore owner or a department manager or store manager is working in the store and they just want to take one small step this week or next week to be a more courageous or intentional leader, what's a good starting point? Bird by bird, right?
I love this question. Look, you're already taking one. Yeah, bird by bird for sure. But also say hello to someone without your phone in your hand. That level of just, hey, how's it going? How's your commute? How's the kid? How's the dog? You know, that sort of attention to an individual without this distraction. We are in a world that it just feels like nobody is ever fully present with each other. So that would be one thing. And another thing is, here's the hot tip. I read an article the other day and it mentioned this. The two very magical words that you should just start doing with people and see how they react is, you're right. People get so warmed up, right? Like, even if you just say, I think it's going to rain. And someone says, you're right. I think it is going to rain. You're just like, yeah.
Validation.
I'm right about the weather.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So just start saying you're right. I mean, you know, not about like things they're categorically wrong about, but just say, yeah, you're right. I like that about that book, that piece of art, that customer that just came in. Yeah, you're right. That was a good one. And see what that adds to the dimension. And also don't be on your phone when you say it.
Mm. Yeah, no, I think about, you know, being in the natural food industry and kind of like the work that we do is like, we have to be discerning. We have to like look at these products and make sure they don't have the ingredients. So it's like, I have to question everything. I have to question, is organic really as transparent as it should be? So for us to like take a second for ourselves and like not have to be so discerning, like, I don't know, are they right? Is it going to rain? And just say, yeah, you're right. Like that's actually, you're rewiring your brain in a way to be able to also accept that someone else is right. I love that.
Or somebody brings up a question. Hey, is it organic? Huh, you're right to ask that question. Boom. You know, you haven't said yay or nay, but you're acknowledging that was a smart thought. People really love to be told they're smart.
Yeah. No, there's no doubt about that. Especially those of us that are words of affirmation folks. Love
that.
There
you go.
Yeah.
Exactly. You're right, Chris. You're right.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Wow. Well, Jen, I really appreciate your time today. If there's one thing we haven't covered yet that you think natural food independent retailers need to know about leadership, and mind you, we don't have another 30 minutes, what would you impart or want to mention to the folks listening?
Well, more than anybody, I feel like the folks you're talking about are in person with folks a lot more often than other industries might be. And so again, I would just be even more mindful of being present, not just with the employees that report into you, but the customers around you. You are contributing to an energy in that space that is filled with people coming in and out all day. So your toxicity or the passive aggressiveness of teammates, things like that, is really going to have an impact on even the shoppers that come in. So, you know, hold some space for keeping that energy clean, light, honest, and safe. And I think, you know, that pays a lot of dividends for everybody.
Awesome. I love that. Yeah. And then you connected it back to the shopper, because that's really what it's all about in retail, is we're providing a service to our shoppers.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that does translate to them. So Jen, quick before we leave, how can people get in touch with you if they want either your consulting or coaching or be a part of any of the So Now You're a Manager trainings?
Yeah, great question. So you can always go to beplucky.com. So beplucky.com. You can also, I would say, sign up for the newsletter there. There's a newsletter link at the top right. And every month I send out a newsletter with some stories about workplaces and all the dates for upcoming things. And I'm also on Instagram at bepluckster.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jen. I really appreciate the time today. And I hope that folks listening get at least one thing out of this conversation and become, you know, more courageous leaders, if nothing else.
You can do it.
You can do it. And you're right.
Oh, my God. Perfect ending.
Cool. Thanks, Jen. See ya.
Thanks, Chris.
This episode is brought to you by Mezcla. Mezcla is shaking up the protein bar aisle with puffed, crispy bars that are anything but boring. These protein bars bring the crunch and the flavor. Think bold combos like matcha vanilla, pistachio chocolate, and the rich new hazelnut chocolate. They're not just delicious, they're functional too. Each bar has 10 grams of plant-based protein, only 170 calories, and they're gluten-free, non-GMO, and kosher. So the real question is, which flavor are you grabbing first? We've got an exclusive offer just for our listeners. Get 25% off your order with code INFRA at checkout. Just head over to www.eatmezcla.com and fuel up with your new favorite snack. That's code INFRA, I-N-F-R-A, for 25% off at eatmezcla.com. Go get snacking.
As we wrap up this episode of The Buyer's Desk, we'd like to extend our heartfelt thanks to the incredible Infra staff, contributors, dedicated independent retailers, and visionary natural food brands and business partners that made this episode possible.
Stay tuned for more inspiring insights and stories in the world of natural food retail. Until next time, thank you for your support. Angela Bozo, co-host and administrator.
Chris Sorensen, co-host and producer.
Kim Rout, executive producer and segment contributor.
Jim Olson, Spin's segment manager.
Austin Hinkle, audio engineer.
Sarah Super, wellness strategist.
Madeline Ware, marketing writer, editor, and digital manager.
Haley Craig, audio engineer and segment contributor.
Raina Kittredge, segment contributor.
Bella Sislo, outreach manager and segment contributor.